listener production.
You're listening to episode 81 of the Howie Games, part B, featuring Farwood Ahmed. Let his story continue.
So how do you get to Australia?
I was playing cricket as well. Luckily, we were playing all away games, you know. I haven't been back home for a long time because I was a bit scared as well. And I was traveling around the country playing cricket, and then I was keep calling the High Commission, Australian High Commission. And luckily in that, in February 2010, and I just, they knew me, that the people, you know, working there from Pakistan, yeah? Mm. And they, whenever I asked them, they said, okay, we will tell you, they're still in the process, still process. And then one day, just something got in my head. I said, can I talk to the High Commissioner? And she was a lady at that time. I don't remember who was she, but, and then I spoke to her. I said, look, I'm going to play cricket. They're going to pay me. And the season is going to end soon. And I have done like my level 1 and 2 coaching courses in Pakistan. I'm going to coach the kids as well. So if I'm going in the winter, it's just a waste of time. So I really want to go there to play cricket as well and to coach the kids as well. And she said, okay, I will let you know in the next couple of days. And after I called on Friday, I don't remember the date, and then Monday she called me back and she said, you will get your passport, and she didn't say anything else. I said, okay, it's done now.
How did that make you feel, that phone call?
Oh, I was like almost dead. I said, I'm not getting a visa and it's all over. And I was thinking different things, you know. And I got my passport in a couple of days. And when I went to the post office and they said, you got your passport. So when I opened, there was a visa. And I called my mom and my brother.
She hadn't told you that?
And then...
What did you think when you saw the visa?
Oh, I was so happy. And I asked my brother, now find some money, ask some friends, I'm leaving ASAP.
Wow.
I don't want to stay. There was like a 3 months dividend. I said, I'm going to go. If I can play cricket or something, that would be nice. But I want to leave. Just let me go. And my mom was really, really upset. She was crying badly. And everyone at home, like, there was just like a kind of a really sad environment at that time. My friends and everyone was very sad because I was leaving and I didn't know when I'm going to be back. And I told them, you know, I don't know. So when I left, friend of a friend, he was living in Melbourne. I didn't know anyone else in Australia. English was pretty bad. Didn't know what's the culture, what's the life like here in Australia, what's the differences. Only thing I heard, I watched throughout my career was cricket, you know. I knew where it's MCG, where is SCG, this is Melbourne, this is Sydney, this is Adelaide Oval, you know, this is Gabba.
So you knew the country by its cricket grounds?
Yeah, but cricket ground, they said nothing else. Nothing else.
How was your English?
No good, not really good. Was good enough to express myself, but practice makes me like perfect, you know. So there was no practice there, you know. When you don't practice, you're forgetting things. Mm. And when I came here, he was a student, and I didn't know anything, like where I'm going to stay, how I'm going to go to the Griffith, you know, and how I'm going to like live here, you know. When I called the president of the club, he says, you can't play. The cricket New South Wales rules are you have to play 5 games before the semi-final. We're already in the semi-final. And he says, you don't need to come here. I said, what I'm going to do? He says, I don't know. I got a gift for him, like a cricket bat. He says, send it to me. I sent the bat to him. And then I said, now what? And I got the first week, I was going to city for something. And I got a fine because I got the wrong ticket. And I got $75 fine.
Parking ticket?
No, on the train.
Oh, on the train, right.
Yeah, on the train. And then...
$75 fine?
Yeah.
How much money did you have?
I got some, I borrowed from okay. Friends. So my brother gave me something to, you know, you can survive for a month or something, you know,
you
whatever happens.
$50,000, $25,000, $10,000, $5,000, like how much did you come to the country with?
$1,500.
$1,500?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I can get.
$1,500.
That was a lot of money for me at that time as well.
The $75 fine's a pretty big fine then,
yeah,
Fudge.
Yeah, so was pretty tough when I came here. I said, oh, what I'm going to do? Like, I never worked properly. I played cricket, you know, for life, you know. I was, for the last 5 years, I was getting paid enough to support myself and a little bit my family back home in Pakistan as well.
So the visa you had, this first visa, how long did that go for?
That was for 3 months.
Okay, so...
for 6 months, sorry.
6 months, okay.
6 months, yeah. So to play cricket.
Did you have to get a job or what did you do?
No, so what I was thinking, I spoke to some of the guys who were there. There was a few guys living together, like mm-hmm. students live in the share house, and I didn't know anything about asylum or anything. So because I wanted to stay and I wasn't thinking about cricket. I wasn't thinking about the job, you know. First thing, how I'm going to stay here. And one of my friends told me, I know a good lawyer, so we can go there. And then she asked for a lot of money. So she was charging like a per hour something, and it was a lot of money.
Wow.
Said, where am I going to pay this from? Even the money I borrowed from someone. And then I have work rights at that time on my visa. So, but there was a guy and he said he was a contractor, apple picking? Yeah, and in Bendigo.
In Bendigo?
Oh, goodness me.
How'd you get there?
So in winter, there was a winter, you know, we were getting into winter. So that's like around April and was like autumn. The days were getting shorter and I said, I want to do everything. I never work on the fields, you know, or farming or anything. And we have to it would have taken 2.5 hours. So I have to took a train to the water gardens. There was a couple of Indian guys. They were working there. So they would have picked us and I would have paid him like $15 or $10 something on each side to draw me there.
To drive you up there?
Yeah, to drive me up there.
And then you pick the apples?
Yeah, to pick apples for 8 hours. I said, oh, is this going to be life like this? I'm going to be working every day in 5 hours. So I was actually leaving in the dark, coming back home in the dark again. So all day's sunlight were in the farming and working hard. But I'm really tough on myself. So I said, I'm going to work hard. So I don't know where that come from, but I planned. I worked for like a couple of months there. And I said, okay, I got some money. And I said, okay, this money for rent, this is for food. And I sent some money back to my brother to give back to that guy. I don't like to borrow money from anyone. I said, okay, pay him.
To pay back the $1,500.
Yeah. And this. So I got a shared room somewhere. I knew how to use the computer and I found a guy. He was a Pakistani as well. And he got 2-3 more guys and I shared a room with another guy. And I said, okay, I worked for 3 months in the farming and I got some money. And I said, okay, I'm not going to farm because I need to save those 5 hours. So I need to find a job close by.
The traveling hours up and back.
Traveling hours, you know, I said, it's killing me because I have no life, you know. And the other side, the lawyer was so expensive and, you know, she was asking for evidence, this and that. And I was calling my brother, you know, send me this and send me that. And she asked him, but I never saved anything over there. I never thought I'm going to go to Australia and I'm going to apply for asylum. And then she asking, you know, we need evidence for everything, you know, whatever you're talking. And I said, what this happened to me, I don't know. So I'm going to get the, there was a little bit evidence. There was there was some news in the newspaper and there was some reports in the police station about the kidnapping, phone calls and here and there. But at that time, you know, the typical Nokia phones and you don't save anything.
No.
It's pretty hard, you know, there is no iCloud or
no
Gmail at that time. You know, how are you going to save those things?
So, Fuzz, you had to show that you are under threat if you went back to Pakistan.
Yeah,
is that the gist of it? That, that your life was under threat?
So justification was so hard here because they said, we don't believe you. And I didn't have any like a very sufficient evidence to prove myself, yes, I'm on the right side.
So, but the proof was to say that it wasn't safe for you to go home.
Yeah, but they says we need a solid proof from, you know, from directly to you where whatever you're saying, you know,
yep.
Give us a proof. Then you can tell us, you know, that that's what happened when you were playing cricket, when you were doing working for NGO.
Okay.
Like those things, you know. And then I find a work. There was like a, you know, the fencing company.
Yeah.
I find a job over there, but
you're putting up fences.
So no. The, you know, the bases of the those blocks, you know, the bases of the fences.
Oh, the temporary fences. Yeah. Like the big concrete blocks.
Yeah, the concrete blocks. So I have to wash those one, to clean those one, hey, and to lift those one for 8 hours. And it was such heavy job. I said, what's going on? And in the meanwhile, the summer was here and I was craving for cricket as well because people were talking about cricket, but I didn't know anything about cricket, you know, what's happening, you know, what's the good competition and who is there. I went to MCG actually with my friend. I told him, you know, the guy who I stayed with, I said, man, take me to the MCG. And I went earlier. I watched the grand final when Bushrangers were playing Queensland in 2010 and they won the grand final.
You just went and sat in the crowd?
Yeah, sat in the crowd in the corner and I was watching on the screen and David Hussey was batting. He smashed it. He made 185 or something in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And Cameron White there, Peter Siddle there, you know, I said, oh, this is amazing, you know, and I was at the MCG. It was unbelievable. I still remember everything, how I walked to the MCG, how I was craving, you know, asking everyone, how can I get to the MCG, please? Can someone take me? I didn't know. I was with the guy at St. Albans, the Western Suburbs.
Mm.
And yeah, that was amazing. And that year I was craving for cricket, so I just started emailing all the clubs. I don't know. And what I have done wrong, you know, I write one email and I was like pasting all the
cut and paste
emails. And sending one email to everyone. I wanna play cricket. So I went to Melbourne Uni Trials, North Melbourne Cricket Club Trials, and I told him I played first class cricket and just no one believed me. He said, oh, everyone playing first class cricket and we don't believe you doing this. I said, well, let me play cricket, you know. And then I was at the North Melbourne Cricket Club training, like a trials, you know. That was their first like a training session. Then the guy who played for them, he was captaining, coaching Hoppers Croxton Cricket Club. And he saw me batting and bowling. He said, do you like to play for us? I said, why not? I didn't know what is it. He says, oh, they were in the third division. VTCA third division.
Wow.
Not like a senior division, not the top division. They were in the third division. I didn't know. I said, yes, I want to play cricket. And then we got the bye. There was another club. They got some problems. So we upgraded without any reason. So we played on the below senior division, division one, I think. And then that year, I took a lot of wickets and...
I think I actually, because I like my stats, Fuzz. What did you get here? At Hoppers Crossing, in your second season, 58 wickets in 12 matches at the average of 10.97.
That was the second year.
That was the second year.
That was second. The first year, I think I took 34 or something wickets. So I made a lot of runs as well.
You made runs?
Yeah, I was pretty good at that.
What happened?
I was batting. So what happened when you play professional cricket? They ask for, you know, they say, your job is shippy. They said, your job is to take wickets, not to make runs. I said, okay, I'm not gonna look at back to the batting side.
So Fuzz, I got the obvious question. You've come from playing cricket in Pakistan. What was your initial thoughts of club cricket in Australia? It was obviously very different. I presume blokes were having, bringing out at tea or at the drinks break, you know, someone has to bring a plate of sandwiches, and at the end of the day, you know, everyone has a couple of beers in the change rooms. I'm sure it was very different to your previous cricket experiences. The game is the same, but...
Completely different. Even game does look different as well, because we have to make the most out of nothing over there. There's no facilities, you know. Literally, if I can tell you, even maybe now as well, but... When I played club cricket over there, you know, when I started playing first class cricket, it got changed, you know. But you know, we, for the whole cricket club, we have only two bats.
Two bats.
Two bats, two cricket bats. One for running, one for playing. So when you play, when the strike, when you are on the strike, you have to change the bat.
Really?
Seriously, I'm telling you, you have, when the guy is getting out, you have to wait. So he's going to take out the pads and everything, helmet, full of sweat, bloody, even he made 100, you have to use those gloves, pads and everything.
A bit sweaty.
Yeah, seriously. This, no facilities, nothing. So what, it's so expensive.
So what was it like then to come to Hoppers Crossing? What hit you as the main difference?
Well, everything, like the facilities were still, Hoppers Crossing facilities are amazing, you know. If you go there even now, they're like a top-class facility. There are two grounds, you know, there was proper nets there, you know. There was like a, the cricket ground is actually, both grounds are really, really good quality grounds. And I said, look at this. This is club cricket. This is nothing, you know, like you can go. I'm not saying, because cricket is, there's too much cricket here. There's a lot of competition, a lot of clubs, you know.
Yep.
But we have less cricket and more players. So you will see the competition is very strong back home. The clubs and the players are really good, because not many players playing different competition. You know, there are only few competition, and there are hundreds of thousands of players.
Wow.
There's only one sport. I would say two sports, but it's only one now. No one knows about hockey. Hockey disappeared.
Cricket, even us,
my friend here from Australian team as well, from my Victorian team. No one knows, even in the Australian hockey team players. No one knows about them. So it's just disappeared from the scene, you know.
So you're at Hoppers Crossing and you're having lunch and tea breaks and all that type of stuff that we have here. And I'm sure, as I said, I'm sure they had beers at the end of the day, but you're accepted within the cricket club?
Yeah, it was good. I knew that, you know, by that time I was pretty good. I know my limits, and I wasn't here to change the culture, you know, like even when I was, I'm going to go a little bit ahead of this thing.
Yep.
When they, in Bushranger, when they start, after the winning, throwing beer on each other, I said, okay, I'm going to leave the room and you do whatever you want.
Yep.
I'm not going to stop you, and don't stop just because of me. If you don't want to change your culture, that's your culture. You know, that's the culture of the, you know, of the cricket here, because summer, beer, sun, cricket, it's all together here, you know. So there's a lot of in Australian team now, they don't drink.
No.
Peter Siddall, he's not drinking. David Warner, I'm not sure if he's drinking now, but I have seen him, he hasn't been drinking for a long time. So there's a lot of guys, they're not drinking. So it's not about that. It's just about, I'm here and I accept everything, you know. It doesn't mean that I'm gonna practice everything.
Yep.
So I know I'm educated. I know how to interact with the people. You know how to accept. Like, I accepted everyone. You know. So it was easy for me. You know, to find a timing for the prayers and what's halal and what's not halal. You know, I'm pretty good at that thing as well. And I discussed with the president of the club, coach and captain, you know, this is what I need. I'm not high maintenance, you know. Like, they say, oh, we can't manage to give you halal food. I was happy with the food. I said, I'm not going to die. It's only one Saturday.
Yep.
If you don't eat like a meat or hot food, in the evening I'm going to go home and going to cook for myself. So, like, this is how I am. I can adjust easily. So I don't need to, even in the first class cricket, in the early days, you know, when I wasn't sure, I just ate in the 4-day cricket, I just ate fruits.
Right.
In the lunchtime, I said, okay, I'm going to go in the evening, find a restaurant. You don't have to eat meat all the time or bread all the time, you know. You can have vegetables and you can have fruits and you can have nuts, you know. All these things are halal, and you can have seafood, you know.
So you play your first season at Hoppers. What is happening with your visa situation at this time?
Nothing. There was no response from the what's called from the immigration or home affairs, whatever you call it.
So you were getting nowhere with your asylum application?
No, nothing. It was just like I was on bridging visa. So I was legal in Australia. I got the work rights, you know. Even ASRC, they asked me, you know, to if you we can give you support if you are not working, you know. Red Cross at their time, and I said, no, I'm not taking any support, like a financial support. I said, I'm young, I'm healthy, I can work.
What else were you doing? What other jobs were you doing?
Then when I start playing cricket for Hoppers Crossing, I find a job in the fertilizer company in Laverton, and then Kmart was building. There's a massive warehouse in Truganina. There's like, I heard it's 6,000 square meter or something. It's massive. It's huge.
Hmm.
And they were just, I didn't know about the recruitment agencies at that time. And then find out someone told me, I got the forklift license as well. I was keep working hard to get better.
So you can drive a forklift?
Yeah.
You good at a forklift?
Yeah, I got a license. Right. So I'm all good.
Okay.
I got a forklift license and I said, I work here. And then I went to agency, and then I needed like a little bit organized work, you know, and it was still really hard job at the Kmart. It was in feed on the belt, and you have to like unload the pallets all the time for 8 hours, you know, but I was happy. The money was better. 23 point something was per hour.
Okay.
So money was good, and I was working, and actually I was playing cricket as well. So cricket is on Saturday.
Yeah.
They asked me many times to do overtime on Saturday. I said, no, this is cricket day. No, I'm not playing. But the good thing was that one of my friend at that time, my club teammate, he's a good friend with Alex, the Australian cricket team physio.
Alex Contouris.
Yeah. And I asked him, can you ask your friend, I want to bowl to Aussies in the nets. And India was playing at that time. And I went to the MCG nets for this for the first time. And I bowled really well. I remember I got Shane Watson, I got Ponting, I got Michael Clarke out. And I was happy.
How'd you get Ponting out?
I don't remember, but I got him there, three guys, you know. And then JL was, I think, assistant coach at that time. And then he asked me something. He says, what are you doing and what are you doing here? And are you playing cricket? Are you going to go back to Pakistan? I said, no, I'm staying here. I'm living here now and I'm playing cricket here. And he was the first guy and he asked me those stuff, you know. And then he told me next year when I met him, he says, go. I said, where is the best place to go and play cricket, you know, for me? And then he advised me to go to South Australia or stay here if you have a chance. But Ducky was here, but he was asking me to go to South. There was no spinners over there at that time. But when I bowled over there, then I realized, man, you can bowl. If you can get out those guns, then you can. And then I was thinking, if I can play one game for Bush Ranger, I just really love that name. You know, the Bush Rangers and Hussey was playing and all that. Then next year, 2011, I said, okay, I'm going to do coaching course as well. So working, playing cricket, I wanted to stay in cricket.
Mm.
So, okay, if I can't play cricket, there was no hope to play Bush Rangers or anything. Okay, I can do coaching. So I start coaching, you know, and then I done my level one course. Then I was going to do level two in the winter of 2011. And there was the time when we had one session to just have a look to the Bush Ranger training session.
Oh, just to go and watch?
Yeah, just to go and to watch. And
as part of the training course?
Yeah, training course. And I didn't board like for 3 months or something. No cricket. When I finished in February, there was like in June, April, May and June, like 3 months, no cricket, nothing. And Sheepy and Helmer was there. And
so Greg Shipp and Simon Hill, yeah, the coaches of Victoria.
Yeah, and there's like a Finchie was starting at that time, Maxie was starting at that time, Wadi was captain, Hustler was there, Bucky was there, and all the guys were there. And I went to, and I was just in like the casual stuff. And I asked Shippy and Helmut, can I bowl? And he was like sitting there and doing something, and he had a look at me like this. what do you do? I said, I bought spin. He said, what can I say? I bought leg spin. He said, really? I said, yes, yes. He said, okay, take the ball.
And you were just wearing your casual clothes?
Yeah, casual clothes. And I said, okay. And Bobby was batting.
Bobby Kwani?
Bobby Kwani. I thought he's a fast bowler or something, you know, because he was tall and big, you know. Fastball. Bobby might be listening. Sorry, Bobby. Fastball through the gate ball. Leg spin, fastball, you know. And then I said, okay, I got this guy. Second ball, a big wrong one. He went this way and the ball went that way. When I had a look back, everyone was watching. And I got a little bit like, what I can say, a little bit shy or something, you know, like. And then Helmo and Shivi said, can you keep bowling? And he told to the guy from the coaching, I think was Paul Montgomery. Uh-huh. He was conducting the coaching course and he said, he's going to stay with us. And then I bowled like 40 minutes. I was so excited, but I didn't realize I'm bowling after three and a half months. And I was like, in the evening, I was sore everywhere. I said, what you have done? But I was seriously excited. Shippy asked me, can you come like to bowl to us, you know? And then I was taking... because they train during the daytime, you know. It's not just like on the weekend or after hours. So that's a full-time job for them. So then I was taking a time off, day off from the job. I said, okay, I'm not coming today. This on the train, you know, with the gloves. And I was so happy and excited, you know, to train with them for the whole season. And then that season, I took a lot of wickets for Hoppers Crossing.
Oh, is that the 58?
Yeah.
Average 10?
Yeah. And then I realized, I asked people, what do I need to do to play better cricket? And everyone said, great cricket. And then I went to play for, I left Hoppers Crossing. Even they offered me a good money. And it was good money for me at that time. Mm-hmm. But then I left and I played for Melbourne Uni, but the new president by that time, he's still a president, Derek Bennett. And I spoke to him. I said, man, I need, because my visa got refused at that time and I went to appeal in the court against the decision. And I said, I need someone to help me for my visa, nothing else, because I don't want to go back. I want to stay here. And I will play cricket for you guys, you know. These are my stats, you know. I know it's VTCA, but I bowled really well. And I played first-class cricket already. I want to play cricket for you guys, but I need help. Good friend with James Sutherland, because they played together same year for Melbourne Uni. And he spoke to him as well. But in the meanwhile, in 2012, what happened, South African team was coming. And I got a call from my club president, Derek Bennett. He says, do you know you're going to train with the Australian team in Queensland? I said, I was so excited. I was over the moon. I said, how on the earth they can call me? Because there was no leg spin in the whole country. And Eddie Cowan actually said, I saw a guy, he's bowling pretty decent leg spin, and we haven't seen Imran Tahir. So we're going to face him. So if we have to face him, we need someone to bowl us in the nets. And then I went to Queensland and to play, to train with them for 1 week. 1 week, 4 or 5 days, something. But the good point was that I went at the night time, and early in the morning when I was going to train, I went to the lobby for the breakfast. So I went just in the corner sitting there, and Pana came in and he says, I'm Ricky. And he was then reading a newspaper and he asked me, come, sit here. So, great man, not just a great player. He said, how you doing? How's your family? He didn't ask me about cricket. He says, how's back home and how's everything? How's your life here? And he said, this is my number, mobile number, Ricky Ponting, like one of the greatest cricketer of the modern day. And he asked me, this is my number. If you need any help, don't hesitate to call me or text me.
Wow.
And I said, how on earth you can do that? He didn't ask me about cricket, you know, what you do. he knew that he's going to face me in the nets, you know, but he said, how is your family and about everything back home? How is Pakistan, you know, and this and that. And I was so happy, you know, the way he like accepted me, the way he embraced me, you know, into the team. And I was just a part-time, a net bowler. And then I bowled really well in the nets and everyone was so, it was such amazing to get into the dressing room, you know, and that was the first game of the season, you know. You know, the environment is so good,
yes.
The first game of the season, you
yes.
know. This is summer, this is cricket, sun, you know, Queensland, you know, and it was amazing feeling, you know. I was there and I watched a little bit on the first day and then I came back home. And
of the first test?
The first test, yeah. And there was a time when I start playing for Melbourne Uni. I bowled really well that year. And then we get to the point from immigration. I appealed to the Prime Minister. I got refused in the court as well. And in the I appealed to the Prime Minister, and then there.
Well, someone writes a letter on your behalf to the Prime Minister.
No, I appealed. You know, the lawyer.
Oh,
did,
yes.
And then the cricket. The Melbourne Uni president really helped me. There was a guy who was playing cricket as well and he was a lawyer as well. So he took charge on my case, and then everyone wrote a lot of letters for me from Melbourne Uni, from Hoppers Crossing, you know, to support my case, and then about my cricket as well. So the immigration called me. We need someone to say that you are good enough to represent Australia. If you are good enough to represent Australia, we can give you a visa, not a protection, not asylum. It's called like a former resident visa. And I asked Pana, I called him, he says, okay. I said, I need support like this. You know, if you think, I said, if I'm good enough to represent Australia, there was no spinner at that time either. And I said, that would be great if you can write a letter for me. He said, okay, my manager will call you, you know. And just hang up the phone, and his manager sent me a letter.
James.
And then I sent it to immigration. Next day I was actually came from the job, and I was praying actually. There was like a hour, like a early evening, and I was praying, and I was sitting on the prayer mat. I got a call from my club president. He says, Father, you got a visa, permanent residency. Oh, that was the time. I called my mom, I called my brother. They were so happy. Everyone was so happy. And then, yeah, I went to Cricket Australia, and they, at that time, there was a board meeting, luckily. Excuse me. And the board meeting, and they introduced me over there, and they said, I got my visa. Everyone's happy. You're playing club cricket and this and that. And they said, okay, we're going to unanimously change the rules. If you are a permanent resident, you can play state cricket as a local.
Huh.
And then I got picked for Renegades. So I played only one game, the last game of the pool round. And then I played against English Lions. And before that, I played for English Lions. Then they picked me for the, because the 1 day and 4 day were together at that time. So I missed on the first four-day game. They took me to South Australia. James Muir had debuted in that game. But I played the 1 day and I bowled really well. I took 3 wickets and then played next 4 day, took 7 wickets. Next 4 day, took 4-5 wickets. Next 4 day, 6 wickets. And
could you believe it?
No, I was over the moon. I was actually still like a pinching myself sometimes. You know, at that time, I got off the track a little bit because I was so, the media was, you know, different people were talking about, you know, the next Shane Warne. I nowhere near to Shane Warne, but people talking because I was bowling so well. I was taking wickets and Ashes were coming ahead and there was no spinners. People talking like those things, you know, and I said, what the heck is going on? What's happening? You know, I was daydreaming and it was happening. Like I was sitting on the couch and you're thinking something, next day it's happening. And then I went on the A tour. And at that time I didn't train much. honestly, I'm really honest. I would say I didn't bowl really well in the first game, but it was
in England.
In England, but it was bloody cold, like 9 degrees. Literally, it was 9 or 10 degrees. Was drizzling, and Daisy, then Christian, was an overseas player for Gloucestershire, and he was just slogging me. It was like a 40-meter boundary. I bowled reasonably well back at the end, but he smashed me in few overs, and there was the time when they picked Ashton Agar out for me, and then I went to South Africa for the Zimbabwe and South Africa 3-4 days, and there was a triangular. There was the start of those Tri-Nation series. They're still playing that, you know,
yep.
between South Africa, India, and
yep.
in Australia. And then I took the most wicket for Australia on those two, on their tour. And then there was a thing to, if I want to play for Australia, nah, that was before that. If I want to play for Australia, I need a citizenship. So, and there was the last session after Parliament. So they have to present the bill. You need everyone to be present there because you need 75% votes over there. And then it has to go through the Senate. And there was the last session because then there was a new election and new government would have come. And I was lucky. No one voted against it, you know. And then...
So they put through your citizenship application through the Senate?
Yeah, so what they did, there was not in the law... Because in the law, you have to explain everything word by word. But there was no word of cricket. There was some other sports. If you can represent your country, you can fast track the citizenship.
Uh-huh.
But there was no cricket. But if you want to include the cricket, you have to change the law because you are introducing something different. But with that change, they bring some other stuff as well, like I think some doctors or scientists mm-hmm. or blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I gave test in the Australia House in England, London. I was, after that A tour, came back here, got citizenship, went to South Africa and Zimbabwe, bowled really well, took the most wickets. And then I came back, went to England for one day in T20s. So, yeah, that's how it was just like a beautiful dream. Sadly, it ended really quickly because I didn't actually even enjoy it because I was shocked, you know.
So you played 3 1-days and 2 T20s?
So within 1 year, within space of 10 months, I was playing for Hopper Crossing and then I already played for Australia. With no visa, they gave me 28 days in July 2012. You're going back home within 28 days. So if the Prime Minister says no, you're going back home. So they say you clear your all, you know, bills or everything, you know, if you have anything to pay, you know, overdue things, then you make sure you book your ticket and you are leaving.
And then
28 days, I got my visa.
Your citizenship.
And everything. And within the next 10 months, I have already played for Australia.
A quick pause on Farward. The last episode of the show featured Brett Lee, a man of many, many talents.
There was an Australian game on a one-day match at the SCG, and the day before the game, they asked me to come down to be a net bowler to the Australian cricket team. I'm thinking, how good is this? A whole heap of other Australian bowlers, and I look down, and who's batting? David Boone. How good is this? And I'm just thinking, right, this is like an audition. I want to play for Australia. I want to play for New South Wales first, which was still a long way off. And I ran in first ball, full of confidence, not being cocky, and it came out of the hand horribly. It was a full toss and it hit the side net on the full. Hasn't touched the frigging pitch. David Burns picked up this ball and threw it back to him. Didn't say anything, just mumbled at me. Next ball, run in. Other side, the net on the full. Hasn't hit the cut stuff. And then I think it might have been Boonies at AB, like, get this guy out or something. And I'm like, give him one more go. I thought, all right, stuff this. They're laughing at me, you know. All right. And I ran in and I let go of this ball and it shaped and it ripped the stumps out of David Boone, knocked him over. and I could see Billy and all the boys laughing their heads off behind me. It's gone wide, wide, perfect Jaffa.
That's Binger on episode 80. Back to Fuzzy.
So who did you first play for in that one day or in England? That was against England?
Against England, yeah.
So what was it like, Fuzz, when you found out? We've sat through your journey and where you've come from. What is it like when who tells you, right, tomorrow or in 2 days' time, forward, you're going to be bowling for Australia, you're in the team?
Oh, it was unreal. Still can't believe it that happened to me.
Who told you?
I don't remember. I think Buff was coach. So I think it was Darren Lehman
right at
that time. And I bowled actually really well in the last second. There was two T20s. The first one was the world record when Finchie made 158. We made 250 or something.
Yep.
They made 220.
Yep.
Actually, I bowled well. I still went for 42 or 44 or 40 runs in 4 overs. There was no six in that 4 overs, but it was first time I was actually scared, I would say. Not even like a, you know, was, and like I couldn't believe it, you know. There was a couple of things, you know, to playing on that level within 10 months playing from VTCA to for Australia, and then everything happened in no time. And there was so much stuff, media and citizenship and residency and Shield cricket and 2A tours and then playing for Australia and England, and everything happened, you know, the bill thing, parliament thing and everything.
So what was it like running out on the ground in the Australian colours?
Oh, amazing. I still have that top with me, and honestly, I wear some sometimes. Yeah, I stand in front of the mirror and I love it because I'm not saying everyone, there is story behind every person, you know, everyone is special, you know. I said, well, whenever I meet everyone, I said every human being is special, actually. That's how God created humans, you know. But I went through really hard years, you know, and there was some fascinating things, you know, in my lifetime, and that's how I get to that stage to playing for Australia. It was different from others, completely different, you know, and the whole story and everything was different, and it went like this, you know, like, you know, but I didn't have had enough time to enjoy it, actually. Even listening to those songs when we were listening, going to the from the hotel to the cricket ground, when I close my eyes, just take me to that time, you know. So it was amazing. It was, I have met some great friends. I'm still friends with them. We're catching up all the time. And I went to the different level. I bowled really well. I really worked hard after that to at least to share to the people and especially for my inner soul satisfaction that I'm not here just because of some like sympathy, or I was asylum seeker, or I'm as a special case, or I didn't play much cricket to play for Australia. I went on to took the most wicket in Shield cricket. I think for 4 years I was the most wicket taker.
Eight wickets in a Shield final.
Yeah, and I was for 4 years, I think I was the most wicket taker in the country, and then couldn't play. I went on the couple of tours and was considered here in Australia as well, but never had a chance.
You went to the West Indies where you were so close to getting
so
picked.
So close, and I think I heard Dominica is one of the best wicket for the spinners in the whole world, and West Indies was really struggling, you know, at that time, and there was just the time, you know. It was pretty tough selection. I think Mitchell Starc was there.
I might have picked Voges as well.
And then Hazelwood was there. Who else was there? Who was the other fast bowler? Peter Sidder was there. It was pretty tough. They have to drop someone like a big gun.
Yeah.
And then Junior, Mark Waugh told me, you're not playing. And the thing was that, you know, on the social media, on the print media, electronic, everywhere, everyone said, I will never ever play for Australia again. And I remember I was like, there was tears in my eyes, and I was sitting there, and I said, there was a chance and it's gone. It's going to be tough to get back. I still bowl really well next year. But I knew that even if I'm coach, I'm not going to play two spinners in England.
So far.
There was the only chance, and it just gone. I was pretty upset, but it is what it is. You're not getting everything in this world, you know. Sometimes the luck really make a big factor. And that's what we believe. That's our belief. That's our faith. You know, we say everything has been written, you know. Whatever is written in your destiny, it will, and whatever is written in your faith, it will come to you. No one can take it from you.
So how do you, now, you know, you'll continue to play T20 cricket, and we talked at the start about how successful you've been, in first-class cricket in Australia, in the Big Bash, whenever the Thunder needs a wicket. Give the ball to Fuzzy. Give now, it'll be the Scorchers. How do you reflect on, you played for Australia in short form cricket, which is what every cricketer wants to do. Do you look back on that test opportunity that didn't quite come your way as, oh, or is it just part of the journey that's got you here, which has been a remarkable journey?
Actually, I promised myself if I get a baggy green, I will write a book. Huh. Otherwise, I'm not going to write a book. I said, and my story, my book name, going to be A Road to the Baggy Green. So
I think you should write the book anyway.
I said no. If I don't play test cricket, if I don't have a baggy green, there's no book.
So how do you feel about the fact that you were so close to that one part of the game that you didn't get the opportunity?
Yeah, I was devastated because I bowled so well. I remember when I went to Centre of Excellence, Queensland, and when I was in the camp, you know, and I was bowling to Brad Haddon and Peter Neville there. They said, man, if you're bowling like this, you know, we're winning Ashes. Like, I was bowling so well. And there was just that opportunity. I missed out and, yeah, never played again. It was sad, but it is what it is. You know, like I said, you have to carry on. You have to, you know, put the smile on the face, and you have to move on, you know. And even recently, like when I didn't get much opportunity in the Shield cricket last couple of years, and I said, okay, why about cricket? And for last 4 years in Australia in Big Bash, I took the most wickets. And today, Shippy actually told me, I didn't know that. He says, since 2016, he said, you have the better economy, better average, better strike rate than anyone else in the world, even more than Rashid Khan.
Wow.
From 6 to 16 overs. So in that period, in the middle period, he said, you are best in the world. So I didn't even know that. He told me today in the net. So I still hope I gave up on Shield cricket. It was pretty sad because I love red ball cricket. That's where I really enjoy my time to bowl 20, 30 hours, you know, long spells, and you enjoy. I love my bowling. I bowl. Mm. Even now I'm bowling for hours and hours in the nets, you know. I'm getting older, but you have to love what you do. If you don't love, this is my message to the youngsters, if they are listening, or the parents, they are listening. They have to tell their kids, or the kids they are listening, you have to love. If you are batting, if you are bowling, whatever you do, you have to love it, to enjoy it. You go first, enjoy it, and then you're going to go up and play for your state and then for your country. So I said, okay, I'm going to play T20 cricket and one day cricket only. I might get into the World Cup squad. You know, I was bowling really well. I bowled really well this year and last year, both couple of years in JLT Cup. Both in the Big Bash as well.
Mm.
And then after on those leagues as well, you know. So all those leagues, I was playing really good cricket, and I thought I might get a chance. But no, no chance. And I think it's gone again because I was bowling so well. I'm physically fit. I was in a good headspace because I wasn't expecting much. But I thought if something come up, and I had a good chat, you know, with some people, and they think everyone said you are a big chance to play for Australia in this World Cup. Or before the World Cup, there was 2-2 was India and Pakistan, you know. And I was expecting something there, you know. If something come out, that would be nice, because I'm in touch. And I was very happy to go to the PSL, because if I'm playing against Pakistan, I'm going to have a chance to play in Dubai and Sharjah and Abu Dhabi.
Mm.
And if I'm going to play against Pakistan, I'm going to be there, you know, going with a bigger heart, and I'm going to be bowling to all those guys in the PSL, and I might know their weaknesses as well. But now, no World Cup for me, but I'm still hoping there's a T20 World Cup next year. And if I'm bowling well, Big Bash coming up, different challenges, and, you know, with the age as well, and with especially taking the pressure up, performing well in every league as well. So it's not that easy as well. So it's easier to get on the top, but if you are maintaining that spot, that's the harder thing, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I'm still hopeful. I'm still thinking something will come up. If not, that's a different story, but we live in this world under hope, you know? We're hoping always for something, and then we live a nice life, you know? So I'm still hoping. And hopefully it will happen. If not, I'm still grateful and thankful for whatever happened to me in this country, or how the people helped me in every way. You know, everyone welcomed me, people admire me. You know, there are kids, you know, they want to be like me. And this something really make me really happy. And I'm very hopeful, and I'm very sure that I'm going to give back to this country as well. Hopefully. My dream is to coach someone, some kid, and hopefully they will play for Australia in the future.
We get naturally to the last question here. Maybe you need to come down to Bowen Heads and coach my 7-year-old who loves his cricket, fancies himself more as a medium pacer at the moment.
No worries.
But Fuzz, long-term listeners of this podcast will know I always discuss with my kids who the guest is going to be, and one of them asks the question to the guest. Now, you get, I was talking with the kids this morning before they went to school, and it was my son was fascinated. How could he play for Australia when he's from Pakistan? Can he bowl the wrong one? Can he bowl the flipper? And he's asking me all these questions. I said, well, you ask Fuzzy the question you want, mate. So this is from my 7-year-old. His name is Mac.
Mac.
But his nickname, for whatever reason, Fuzzy, is the Big Penguin. So this is the question to you from the Big Penguin.
Big Penguin here. I started playing cricket in under sevens last year, and I always put my box in the wrong way. Not good. Did you ever have any mistake with your cricket gear?
Now, I didn't put him up to that, but I reckon for the first 5 rounds of last year, Fuzz, the box went in upside down. At one stage, it went on his knee when he was trying to exactly figure out where. So he had a few cricket issues, and he asked me that question. And immediately something popped into my head that is relevant to you, but he didn't know. But I would imagine you've got a good answer for him here, Fuzz.
A couple of big, massive incidents the last couple of Shield seasons. One was against Western Australia, I think, at Alice Spring.
Yep.
Actually, there was a long partnership, and I was waiting. I was going to bat next, and I was like sitting there. I was bored, and you know, and then I start playing with my bat, you know, with the scalpel, you know, and then I cut my thumb, and I asked physio to put some, you know, like a plaster or something on it. In the meanwhile, the batsman got out, and I have to bat. So that's my habit. I put my bat in my armpit, then wear the gloves and going into the ground. So I put one glove in my armpit. So the armpit is thinking there is something there.
The bat.
And I was very, you know, very careful, cautious to put my thumb into the glove. And then I got another glove. And then I said, oh, I have nothing. Where is the bat? When I had a look back, everyone was laughing.
You're halfway out the middle of the ground without your bat.
Yeah. And then there was so embarrassing, you know. It was straight on the Twitter on social media from Cricket Australia with some funny music as well. And there was like a background music, like a voice as well from the crowd. And there was some noise and clapping and laughing people. And yeah, it was really silly and funny as well. And then the next year, the first game, what happened, we were getting out like quickly. I think we got out for 80 or something in the first game at GABA. And then I took the right-hand gloves, went to the middle. I said, not again.
But you got all the way out to the middle.
Yeah. And I said, oh, Fuzzy, not again. You on the camera, something going to happen. Went back, lunchtime or tea time or something. And then the guys were telling me this was happening. Look at this. And after the game, when I went back to the hotel, it went viral again. So those two massive incidents, big penguin, it happens. Something to cheer for. Shield cricket is getting boring. So yes. I thought we need to do something that people can laugh.
Fuzzy, we've been talking for over an hour and a half. I appreciate your time, but more, I appreciate the honesty of your story. There's this chat I've been wanting to have for a long time. I didn't know the full depth of your story, mate, but it's a great story. Pakistan's lucky to have you. Australia's lucky to have you. May you get many more wickets and life be sweet for you, my friend.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Farwood Ahmed, wow. What a story. I hope you took as much from it as I did. Thanks to Fuzz for sharing so much. What a legend. Nice work by Darcy Thompson, as always, to pull this whole operation together. Thanks to you for listening, as always. Next up, Grant Hackett, Thursday, January 23. Until then, peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.
Listener.